And within the class Amphibia, we're going to talk about a couple of orders. The first is the order Anura. The order Anura is sometimes called the frogs or the toads. In reality, there's not a lot of difference between frogs and toads because, most people think that frogs live in water, toads live on land, other things. But really, there's not a lot of distinguishing characteristics between the organisms. So it's more of a imaginary difference, I guess you could say, than a real difference between frogs and toads. The Anura are fairly easy to distinguish from other amphibians because as adults, they have no tails, and they also have large hind jumping legs. This is the largest frog in the world, a picture of one. It's found in West Africa, and it weighs about 7.5 pounds. Okay. Most of the frogs and toads that we have around here do not weigh quite that much. This is a typical frog that you might be familiar with, or something similar to this. Again, notice they have no tail. They do have those hind jumping legs. Here you can see the hind jumping legs in this green tree frog fairly well. Okay. This is what most of you would call a toad. Again, the hind jumping legs, no tail, fairly easy to distinguish frogs and toads. This is another small frog. Notice here, really no tail, no jumping legs. Now when they're in their immature stages, we said that they need to lay their eggs in the water, and these are egg masses, these black strings that you see here. This is an immature frog or toad, and when they're immature, they do have tails, but as adults, they do not. Okay. This is kind of the next stage in the tadpole stage. You can see here they have all four appendages plus a tail, and then as adults, they have no tail. Any questions about the Anura? The next order within the class Amphibia, and the last one that we're going to talk about, is the order Chidata. The order Chidata includes your salamanders and newts. Salamanders and newts are very, very similar. Newts, basically their tail kind of is fin-like throughout their life, even as adults. And the easiest way to tell the newts and salamanders from other organisms or from other amphibians is that they do have a tail, and their hind legs are not modified for jumping. Now, sometimes people will mistake salamanders and newts for lizards, but they have the smooth glandular skin instead of the rough scaly skin that we'll find in lizards or in the reptiles. So just some pictures of some salamanders here. This one here is kind of a colorful salamander. We don't have these around here. It's found in the tropical rainforest. Okay. Some of the salamanders will retain their gills even as adults, like this salamander here. Okay. Any questions about the amphibians? The next class within the phylum Chordata, subphylum Vertebrata, then, is the class Reptilia. The class Reptilia are sometimes what we call the reptiles. They include organisms such as your snakes, lizards, alligators, crocodiles, turtles, and tortoises, and those types of organisms. Okay. The key characteristic of these organisms is that they have a scaly skin that is covered with keratin, or what keratin is it's a protein, and it's really kind of hard. We actually have keratin on our skin. If you scratch yourself really hard, you can kind of see the white scratch marks, and that's because you're scratching the keratin layer off. And what that keratin layer does is it helps to prevent water from evaporating off of the skin. Okay. And so basically the reptiles are the first vertebrates that we've talked about that are truly adapted to living on land. Also, with organisms that live on land, they need to have internal fertilization. Okay, and it's kind of the same reason why plants needed to evolve a pollen grain. And the reason why is because sperm, when it dries out, dies very, very quickly. Okay. And so in the reptiles and in all of the rest of the vertebrates, the terrestrial vertebrates that we talk about, they will either have a copulatory organ or internal fertilization will occur by close cloacal contact. And in some reptiles, they do have internal fertilization by close cloacal contact. Others have internal fertilization due to copulatory organs. What a cloaca is, probably the best way to describe a cloaca, just to kind of give you an idea, is with birds. Birds basically crap, urinate, and release their gametes out of the same opening. They only have one opening, and that's called a cloaca, a common opening. So when birds mate, for example, and when some of the reptiles mate, what they'll do is they'll line their cloacas up next to each other, and the sperm is released and can swim up into the oviducts of the female for fertilization. Okay. We'll talk about one copulatory group of reptiles that have copulatory organs. The first order that we want to talk about within the class Reptilia is the order Squamata. These are your lizards and your snakes. Okay. The order Squamata includes your lizards and your snakes. Probably the group of reptiles that we're most familiar with around here, because we do have lizards and snakes around here, and most of the other groups of reptiles we do not have around here. This is a typical fence lizard, kind of probably the most common type of lizard that we have around here are the fence lizards. The difference between a lizard and a snake is not what most of you are thinking. Most of you probably think the difference is the snakes don't have legs and lizards do, right? And that's not always true. There are some legless lizards and some legged snakes, right? Generally, that's the case, that you can tell the difference because legs or no legs. But in reality, the major difference between lizards and snakes, there's two of them. The first is, in lizards, they have a fracture plane at the base of their tail. So what happens is the vertebrae don't overlap at the base of the tail. They kind of abut each other like this. So if you grab a hold of the tail of a lizard, it can actually break off. Okay. Now some of the bigger lizards, like the Komodo dragon, you're not going to be able to pull its tail off, but it still has that fracture plane in its skeletal structure. The second major difference between lizards and snakes is that lizards have an articulated jaw and snakes have an unarticulated jaw. What that means is that the lizard's jaw is kind of like ours. It's hooked together. They can only open their mouth so far. Whereas snakes, their jaw doesn't connect. It actually can, if they swallow something larger than themselves, their mouths can actually open up and allow that larger organism to move through. Okay? Any questions about that? This is a typical horned lizard or horny toad. Some people call them horny toads. This one here is a type of lizard that we call a skink. This lizard here is venomous. There's only one group of venomous lizards in the world, and they both belong to the same genus. There's the Gila monster, which this is a Gila monster, and we have these down in southwestern Utah, down by St. George. And then there's the Mexican beaded lizard, and it looks very, very similar to the Gila monster. Okay. All of the other lizards in the world are not venomous. Any questions about that?
How venomous are they?
If you get bit by one, you're going to be really ill and in the hospital. It's kind of interesting. Gila monsters are typically nocturnal. They're not real aggressive. You almost have to ask them to bite you for them to bite you, if that makes sense. About almost 100% of the people that are bitten by Gila monsters nowadays are drunk, which should tell you something. Okay. This one here, most of you would think, what, snake? It's actually a lizard. It's a legless lizard. It's called the worm lizard. And you can see right here, this is the base of the tail, and it kind of pinches down there in these species, but they have the fracture plane on the tail and the articulated jaw. This is another worm lizard. Okay. This is a snake. Most of you have seen snakes before. This one here is non-venomous. It's a king snake. Looks a lot like coral, like a coral snake. The way you tell the difference between king snakes and coral snakes, venomous versus non-venomous, is this little saying, if red on black, friend of Jack. Red on yellow, kill a fellow. Okay? So you can see the reds in between the black here. We do have some venomous snakes in Utah. This is one of them, the Sidewinder rattlesnake. We do have coral snakes down in the St. George area as well. This is an eastern diamondback. The most common rattlesnake we have around here is the Great Basin rattlesnake or the Great Basin diamondback rattlesnake. We do not have western diamondbacks here in Utah. Swamp rattlesnake. Okay. Any questions about the squamata, the snakes and the lizards? The next order within the class Reptilia is the order Chelonia. The order Chelonia are your turtles and tortoises. Now, again, very similar to the snakes and lizards, there's not a big difference between turtles and tortoises. Okay? Some people will say, well, turtles live in water and tortoises don't. Well, there's really no taxonomical difference between what we would call a normal turtle and a tortoise. Okay? So again, it's kind of an imaginary difference rather than a realistic one. But turtles and tortoises are fairly easy to distinguish. They have their vertebrae actually grow outside their body and produce a top shell that we call a carapace. And then their sternum actually grows out of their body and produces a protective plate on the underside of their body that we call the plastron. And so they essentially have a shell. Okay. This is a Galapagos tortoise. This tortoise here can grow as probably about as tall as my waist. Okay. And turtles and tortoises typically have long lifespans, sometimes over 100 years. The oldest Galapagos tortoise in captivity died recently, and it was, I think, 140 some years old. Okay. Been in captivity that long, probably a little bit older than that. So they can get very, very old. We only have one species of Chelonia that's native to Utah, and that's the desert tortoise, which is an endangered species. It's found down in southwestern Utah around St. George. Okay. This is an alligator snapping turtle. They can get fairly large. They're found down in the southeastern part of the United States. Okay. Any questions about the Chelonia? The next order is the order Crocodilia. The order Crocodilia are your crocodiles, alligators, gables, and caimans. And again, they're fairly easy to distinguish from other animals because they have kind of an elongated snout. And most of you have seen alligators or crocodiles before. Okay. This is an alligator. An American alligator. In the United States, we do have alligators native to the U.S. Their range is about from Corpus Christi, Texas, along the Gulf Coast, down around the tip of Florida, and up into southern North Carolina. Okay. Now, generally, you don't find them clear up into North Carolina real commonly, but they can get that far up along the Atlantic coast. They live in aquatic types of environments, namely swamps. The way that you can tell an alligator from a crocodile is alligators have rounded snouts. You can kind of see its snout is rounded, even though it's elongate. And when they close their mouth, you don't see very many teeth. When crocodiles close their mouth, they have a lot of teeth showing, and they actually have a more pointed snout than the alligators. Okay. And these animals, they're fun to play around with, but they are dangerous. Okay. This is an alligator here. These are crocodiles. These are Nile crocodiles. You can kind of see that their snout is much more pointy, not as rounded as the alligator. Okay. We do have crocodiles that are native to the United States. The only place where you'll find native crocodiles in the United States is on the southern tip of Florida, however. Okay. This is a beast that's called a caiman. The caimans are native to the Amazonian basin in South America. However, they have been introduced to other parts of the world, including the southeastern United States, especially Florida. And they are an animal species that are a weed, essentially. These caimans, they don't grow as large as alligators and crocodiles typically. A large caiman will only be, 6 or 7 feet long, maybe. Maybe not even that long, 5 feet long. And they are very aggressive. In South Florida, there's such a large problem with caimans that if you see a caiman, you can kill it on sight. Okay, can't do that with an alligator or a crocodile. They eat pets, they bite humans, and they cause other problems. In Miami International Airport, they have people hired full-time to kill caimans. Because what the caimans do is they kind of overpopulate the area. And then when they're They're what we sometimes call ectothermic or cold-blooded, all reptiles. They actually come out on the runways to sun themselves, and that's not a good thing to have crocodilians out on the runway sunning themselves when you're trying to land commercial airliners. Okay. And so it is an animal species that is kind of a weedy species. Any questions about the Reptilia? The next class within the subphylum Vertebrata that we want to talk about then is the class Aves. The class Aves are your birds, okay? Quite a bit is known about the class Aves, and one of the main reasons why is because a lot of amateurs, a lot of non-scientists study birds because they're beautiful, and they're kind of fun to watch. So the Aves are, or the birds, are a distinct group within the subphylum Vertebrata. The Aves are endothermic, or what some of you would call warm-blooded. What are some of the distinguishing characteristics of the Aves, however? Okay, they have feathers. It's one characteristic. What else? What about their bones? Okay, they have hollow bones. What else? Are wings distinguishing? No, because other organisms like bats have wings, right? And they're not birds. Their beak is also not distinguishing. A lot of people think their beaks are distinguishing. They're not, because turtles and tortoises have beaks. They're toothless. Okay.
There's something with their heart, isn't there?
Actually, it's very similar to our heart. So the feathers and hollow bones, plus some other skeletal structures that we'll talk about, are the distinguishing characteristics of the birds. Birds, their bones are kind of strutted. They're not completely hollow. This is actually marrow here in this mammalian bone that is showing you here. With the birds, they're strutted. If they were completely hollow, they would be too weak for the bird. But the reason why their bones are somewhat hollow is so that they are lighter, so that they can fly. That's also why they don't have teeth in their mouth. Teeth are too heavy, okay? And so they wouldn't be able to fly. In addition to having these hollow bones, the birds also have some of their vertebra back here that are fused or glued together. And the reason why they need fused vertebra is so that they can maintain a flight posture. Even if you were light enough to fly, one of your problems would be is that you would create too much drag with your legs. Okay? In other words, you wouldn't be able to hold your legs up in the air for long periods of time straight. Does that make sense? And the reason why is because your vertebra actually moves. And so what happens in the birds is their vertebra become fused together or kind of glued together so they can basically hold their rear end up in the air for long periods of time. Okay. Also, birds will have what we call a keeled sternum. Looks like the keel of a boat. And the reason why they have the keeled sternum is so that they can have large amounts of muscle attached to their sternum, and then those muscles attached to the wings, so that they can flap their wings rapidly, okay? So any of you that eat birds, or the meat of birds, you like to eat what?
The breast.
The breast, or the muscle on the sternum, right? Okay? And the reason why there's so much muscle there is so that they can fly. Those muscles go out and attach to the wings, all right? Any questions about that? Now with birds, there are two main types of feathers that birds have. There's what we call contour feathers and down feathers. Contour feathers are the feathers that are used for flight, also for waterproofing of the bird, whereas down feathers are used for insulation. When you look at a contour feather, what it has is it has this central shaft that runs up the center of the feather. Coming off of that central shaft are these little structures that we call barbs. Okay, so these are barbs coming off of the shaft. And then something that you can't see that's kind of microscopic is you have barbules coming off of the barbs. And on those barbules, they have little hooks that we call hamuli. And what those little hooks do on the barbules is they attach to other barbules, and that gives the feather a flight surface. Okay. Another reason why you can't fly is because you don't have a flight surface. Some of you in here have long hair. If you jumped off a cliff, would that kind of go out and hold you up like a parachute? Why? Yeah, it doesn't stick together. All the hair would just kind of separate, right? You'd fall to the ground. When the birds, their feathers are actually, the barbules and the hamuli on those barbules actually hook the barbs and the barbules together. You've probably all seen this with feathers. If you haven't, go down on Main Street and get a turkey feather down there and check it out. But if you run your hand backwards down the turkey feather, what happens? It looks like it's broke, right? Okay. But you can fix it by doing what? Running your hand back up the feather, and that's what you're actually doing, is you're actually attaching the hamuli to barbs or barbules. Does that make sense to everybody? Now, down feathers, they have barbs, as you can see, coming off of the culmus. They also have barbules coming off of the barbs, but they don't have hamuli on the barbules. And so the down feather actually folds down over the body, and the way that it insulates the bird is kind of the same way that your coat insulates you. Okay? Is your coat warm? Any of your coats?
Is the coat warm?
No, the coat's not warm. What warms your body? Yeah, actually, what happens is a good coat traps the air in between the coat and your body, right? And then your body actually warms up that air that's in between your coat and your body. And that's what keeps you warm, is the air that you've warmed up. Same principle applies with down feathers. These barbs and barbules fold over, which form these little pockets in the bird, between the feather and the skin of the bird, and then they warm those little pockets of air up. Birds actually have a really tough time staying warm when the wind's blowing. Okay, because it's kind of like when you go out with a coat that's not windproof. You can have problems staying warm too, right? Because it blows those little pockets of air out. Okay? Any questions about that? And some down, if any of you have ever had a down coat, can be very, very warm, right? Okay. When I hunt swans and you kill a swan, one of the coolest things about them is they have a layer on their chest of down about that deep. They're so soft. You can sleep on it or anything else, but it's really, really deep and soft. Okay. Any questions about feathers? Okay. This is just again showing the killed sternum, showing the fused vertebra here that allow the bird to stay in flight. Just some pictures of some birds. This is a male frigate bird. In a lot of the birds, we have sexual dimorphisms. Some of the birds have no sexual dimorphism, they are monogamous, but many of the birds do have sexual dimorphisms, and this is a male frigate bird showing off for the ladies. Okay. This is just showing the hollow or strutted bone of the bird. Just some other pictures of birds here. This is a killdeer, common bird that we have around here, around ponds and so forth. This is a kingfisher, pheasants, roadrunners. This is one of my favorite, grouse. I love to hunt grouse. It's one of my favorite birds to hunt. Any questions about the avies? The last class within the subphylum Vertebrata that we want to talk about is the class Mammalia. The class Mammalia are, of course, called the mammals. And this is the group of animals that you belong to. Okay? The mammals have a couple of characteristics that are distinguishing. The first refers, kind of is easy to remember because of the class name. Mammals, the way that the reason why we are called mammals is because we have mammary glands. Okay, mammary glands are glands that secrete milk, and that milk is used to feed young mammals. Okay, the second characteristic that all mammals have is they all have hair. Okay, so all mammals have hair, and they all have mammary glands. Now, some mammals are going to have a lot more hair than others, right? And some mammals, their mammary glands may or may not be active, For example, in most male mammals, the mammary glands are not active. In most of the time, it's in the female mammals where the mammary glands are active. Just kind of a side note for you ladies, you can now give male humans, you can actually give them shots and they will actually start to lactate. So ladies, if you want your husband to breastfeed your baby, it is a possibility now. Okay. But here, what we're looking at here are mammary glands of two different mammals, a cow and a human. And again, these mammary glands are where the milk is secreted. Most mammals have a delivery mechanism for the milk that we call a teat. You can see the teat here on the cow and on the human. Not all mammals have teats, but the teat is a delivery mechanism for the milk in mammals. All right? And milk is actually the most healthy food that you can feed a baby mammal. Okay, not surprisingly enough. In fact, in humans, ladies, if you want to do something good for your kids, breastfeed them at least for a few weeks. Okay. There's quite a few studies out there on healthy versus unhealthy babies. And babies that are breastfed are much more healthy than babies that are bottle fed. I actually saw that with my two youngest boys. We adopted one and then my wife had one. So we had one that was bottle fed and one that was breastfed. One that was breastfed was much more healthy. The other thing, just kind of an interesting study, has shown that bottle fed babies have a lower IQ than breastfed babies. Okay. So if you guys aren't doing well in class and your mom wants to know why and she bottle fed you, you can kind of blame at least, you know, half a grade on her, right? Okay. Or she should have breastfed you when you were young. Any questions about mammary glands? Most of you know what hair is. When we distinguish between the orders of mammals, we do that by their tooth structure, and each order of mammal has their own tooth structure. You guys could probably identify these animals pretty close just by looking at their skull structure and their tooth structure, and you guys aren't even mammalogists, okay? This would be what, down here?
A badger.
Okay, something like a badger, a dog, or a cat, it's carnivore, okay? What's this one right here?
A gopher.
Okay, gopher or beaver, it's actually a mouse skull, but they're all rodents, and rodents have these big incisors. What's this one? Okay, it's a deer. The cows are very similar. And, of course, human up at the top. Okay. We're going to talk about three subclasses within the class Mammalia. Now, on the taxonomic hierarchy, we haven't talked about subclasses before. But if you remember kingdom, phylum, we went to subphylum, class, and we talked about orders. Subclass falls between class and order. And there's a reason why I want to talk about three subclasses. The first of the subclasses we're going to talk about is the subclass Prothera. Then we're going to talk about the subclass Metatheria. And then we're going to talk about the subclass Eutheria. Okay? A Theria, just ending here, Theria is a placenta. Most of you know what placentas are, right? What do you use a placenta for in mammals? What are they? What's the function of a placenta? Okay, in most mammals, the baby is nurtured inside of the mother and they get their nutrients from the mother across the placental barrier. Okay, so that's what the theria means. So we have a group of mammals that are called eutherians. What does the prefix eu mean? Good. Remember we talked about eukaryotic cells? Okay, meant good nucleus. Well, eutherians means good placenta. These are what we call the true placental mammals. And we actually are eutherians. The metatheria, meta means what? A modified, okay, so they have a modified placenta, and we'll talk about that. And the prefix pro means what? Before, okay, and so actually the protherians have no placenta. Okay, so we're going to talk about how they have their babies. Within the subclass Protheria, there's only one order, the order Monotremata, which includes what we call the monotremes. There are only two extant or living monotremes on the earth today. And that's the duck-billed platypus and the echidna. And I'll show you some pictures of each. So this is a duck-billed platypus. Kind of looks like a beaver with a duck's bill. The only place where you find the order Monotremata on the earth today is on is in Australia and on some of the islands surrounding Australia. But the monotremes are much different from the other mammals in a couple of respects. The first way that they are very different is they actually lay eggs. Okay? They do not have a placenta. A lot of times you'll hear people say, well, mammals are animals that have a placenta or have live births. And that's not necessarily true. Okay? The second thing that makes the monotremes different from the other mammals is they have no teeth. Remember we talked about the teeth is typically the delivery mechanism for the milk, for the young, right? The monotremes have no teeth. What they do is they actually, their mammary glands secrete milk, and the mother will lay on her back kind of, and the milk will run into a depression in her chest, and then the young will actually lick the milk out of that depression, lick it off of her hair. Okay.
Can we go back to
the
other slide real quick?
Yeah. You'll see it again.
Oh, okay.
Any questions about the monotremes? So they lay eggs, have no teats. This is an echidna here. Okay. The echidnas are sometimes called the spiny anteaters. Again, they're only found in Australia and some of the islands surrounding Australia. And again, they lay eggs and they have no teat. The next group of mammals that we want to talk about are the marsupials. They belong to the order Marsupialia. The marsupials include organisms such as the koala bear that you see in this picture, as well as here's a koala, the opossum, as well as kangaroos. That's probably the best known of the marsupials. Now, the marsupials are different from the other mammals in a couple of respects. Basically, they have a placenta, but the young does not develop entirely using nutrients that are transferred across the placental barrier. Okay. What they actually do is, very early on in development, before the young is completely developed, the young is actually born. Okay, and what the young will do is it might actually even crawl out of the vaginal opening. We'll then grab on the hair of the mother, and the mother might help it and get it up into a pouch. And inside that pouch is where you find the teats and the mammary glands of the marsupials. And then what happens is the young and the mother produce substances that actually glue the mouth of that young to the teat. And much of the development occurs in the pouch. Now, once that development is complete, the young can get out and move around, but it comes back and they feed using the teats inside of the pouch, as you see here with this opossum. You can see these baby opossums that have come back to get some milk. Okay. Any questions about that? Now, one thing that might be interesting for you ladies is that we don't think, because birth is so early in development, we don't think that marsupials go through labor pains, which would kind of be nice for you guys, right? Okay. Some females might rather have pouches over their mammary glands and develop their young that way rather than have labor pains. Okay. Most of the marsupials are found in Australia and on the islands that surround Australia. The opossum is a native marsupial to the United States, generally found in the southern U.S. This is a marsupial, the opossum. Of course, your kangaroos and wallabies belong to this group, as well as your wombats, koalas, etc. Any questions about the marsupials? The rest of the mammals are what we call the eutherians. The eutherians have a good placenta. The first group that we want to talk about belong to the order Chiroptera over here, and they're called the bats. The bats are actually quite important mammals. Around here, bats are important insectivores. Other places in the world, such as in the tropics, I think I mentioned this before, they are important pollinators of plants. Okay, this is a bat that's pollinating a flower. The wings of the bat are actually a little bit different than those that we find in the bird. What you're actually looking at here is the hand of the bat and their skin in between the fingers And that's what gives the bat a flight surface. So if you look at this picture here, you can actually see the finger of the bat here. So this is the skin in between the fingers. Okay. Any questions about that? Now bats, a lot of people are afraid of bats because some of the bats do carry diseases. It's kind of interesting around here, people that get bitten by bats, most of the time if you're bitten by a bat, you're a female. Did you know that? Your chance of being bitten by a bat are much greater if you're a female than a male. Why is that? Well, actually, it has to do with hairstyle. Okay? Females tend to have kind of longer, more poofy hair. And bats, they're insectivores, the bats we have around here, and they have, most of you know, they have like sonar. So when they send their signal out and they receive this kind of blurred information that comes back from a poofy hairdo or long hair, they think it's a whole mass of insects, and they fly in ready to get a meal, and they get hit and have to defend themselves and bite their way out. Okay? So these are flying foxes, these are tropical bats. These flying foxes can actually get quite large, from head to foot about this long. Okay. This is a I can't remember the common name. They're the most common bats we have around here. No. This is a vampire bat. It's actually feeding on a hog. They're only found in South America, however. The next order that we're just going to kind of breeze through these is the order Insectivora, which are your shrews and your moles. These organisms typically live underground and feed on organisms such as worms and other soil organisms. This is a shrew. Out of the mammals, we may know less about the Insectivora than any other group because they are burrowers and it's hard to study animals when they're underground. Okay, the next group are the Lagomorpha, which are your rabbits and pikas. The Lagomorphs, a lot of people think that they're rodents, but they're actually not because they don't have incisors that constantly grow and they actually have more teeth than rodents. Yeah?
You know how you said how the marine mammals have hair? The mammalians have hair. So, the marine mammals have them too, like the killer whales and stuff?
Uh-huh. Yeah, if you've ever been really close to a whale, they'll have hair around their nose, they'll have hair around their genitalia. May not be a lot, but they do have some. So the Lagomorphs are your rabbits and pikas. Most of you know what a rabbit looks like. Pikas are a group of organisms. This is a pika right here. I took this picture at about 11,000 feet elevation above Telluride, Colorado. They look a lot like a mouse, but they have no tail, or kind of like a rabbit's tail. They have no tail, but their tail is very small. And the only place you'll find pikas is at really high elevations. The next group that we want to talk about are the primates. If you want to see a primate, look next to you. Primates have a very large skull cavity, and so they have the largest brains of any animal. Your primates include your gorilla. Lemurs belong to this group, as well as humans. Okay. Any questions about the primates? The next group that we want to talk about are the rodents. I know I have one out of order here. The rodents are the largest order within the class Mammalia as far as diversity and also probably numbers of individuals. Rodents all have incisors that are constantly growing. And rodents include organisms like squirrels, chipmunks, mice, beaver, rats, okay? All of those organisms are prairie dogs. Here's a beaver. Chipmunks, of course, belong to this group, as well as your squirrels. Okay. The next group are the... The next group that we're going to show you some pictures of are the Edentia. The Edentia include your anteaters and your armadillos. These organisms basically just have rudimentary teeth. They don't have very big teeth. One of the reasons why they don't really have any teeth at all, or their teeth are very reduced, is because they feed mostly on insects. Okay. And so they're an insectivore. They don't really need big crushing teeth like many of the other mammals. This is a giant anteater. Where would you find anteaters, by the way, in the world?
Africa.
Maybe some of the rainforests.
Canada, Africa, South America.
Yeah, South America is the only place where you'll find them. All of the Edentia are New World animals. Okay. The giant anteaters are found in the pampas of Argentina mainly. This is an armadillo. We do have armadillos in the southern United States. They are insectivores. This one's actually pulling apart a log looking for termites or something. There's so many of them in some places in the southern United States, like Texas, that when you go to Texas, they call these Texas speed bumps. They're all over the roads. Okay. The next order is the order Carnivora. The order Carnivora includes your cats, dogs, bears, seals. These organisms are different from the other mammals in that they have very large canine teeth. That's these teeth right here. Okay. So they have very large canine teeth, both on top and bottom. And that is the distinguishing characteristic of the Carnivora. So organisms like your black bear. This is actually one of the most endangered mammals in the world right now. It's called a red panda. There's probably fewer than 50 of them in the wild now. They're native to Southeast Asia, Vietnam, Laos, Cambodia. And those countries have been war-torn for so many years that they've probably all been hunted for food, so forth. Your cheetah belongs to this group. This is a silverback jackal, your dog family, so forth. Any questions about that? The next group are your Archaeodactyla, which are even-toed ungulates. Ungulates are animals that eat mainly grass or plant material. And they typically have really flat teeth at the back. There are two groups of ungulates. There's what we call the even-toed ungulates and the odd-toed ungulates. Even-toed ungulates are what you mostly think of when you think of an animal that eats grass. A mammal anyways, whereas the Parasodactyla, probably the most familiar of the Parasodactyla around here, are horses. They only have how many toes?
One,
right? Okay, so that's odd number. Most of the ungulates around here have two toes, so things like your pronghorn antelope, your sheep, bighorn sheep, also your domesticated cows, domesticated sheep, bison belong to this group, elk, and I should put some pictures in here. You know, your domesticated pigs, all the pig family belongs in this group, your domesticated sheep, domesticated cows, so a lot of the animals that we eat belong to the Archaeodactyla. The Parasodactyla are the odd-toed ungulates. There's not as many species in the Parasodactyla. Probably the best known are your horses. With one toe. The other group that are well known in this group are the rhinos, and they actually have three toes. Okay. Any questions about the ungulates?
What's that thing above the...
A tapir.
Tapir?
Mm-hmm. Found in South America. The next order is the order Proboscidae. Proboscis means a nose, and these are your elephants. And as you can see, they have a long nose, or snout, trunk. This is an African elephant. There are two species of elephant in the world, the African elephant and the Asiatic elephant. There's actually some debate as to whether or not there should be three species of elephant. There's some elephants that have kind of evolved on the islands of Borneo and some of the islands off Indonesia. And they think they may be able to consider them a separate species of elephant, but two or three species is all that belongs to this group. The elephants are the largest land mammals and do have the longest gestational times, which is how long it takes for a baby to develop inside of the womb across the placental barrier of any terrestrial mammal. Their gestational time is, 23 months, so a couple years. Okay. The next order is the order Sirenia. Your Sirenia are your manatees. Their manatees are not found very much throughout the world. They're threatened in many places in the world. Probably the most familiar place to you where we have manatees around here is in the Caribbean, off the southern coast of Florida and into the Caribbean. And one of the reasons why they're so endangered is because of humans. These organisms, all of the mammals have lungs, and so they have to come to the surface of the water to breathe, even if they are aquatic. And these organisms, what they'll do is they feed on seaweed and so forth, and they'll dive down, they'll eat, they'll come to the surface so that they can breathe, and they'll lay just right underneath the surface of the water. And so why they're so threatened is when people drive their boats, they don't see the manatees sitting that far below the surface of the water. And when they hit them with their boat, they cause their props, basically cut their backs all up, kill them. It's very hard to find a manatee in the wild without prop scars on its back. So there are protected areas off the southern coast of Florida where you cannot drive a motorized boat, and it's because of the manatees. This is a picture of a manatee. Another name for them are the sea cows. You can see it has some seaweed in its mouth. Another common name for these organisms are the mermaids. This is where the idea of mermaids came from. Okay, when the sailors, Columbus and the boys, come across the ocean, they saw these manatees, and when they feed their young, what the mother does is she has really large breasts when she's lactating. She'll come to the surface of the water and hold their babies and suckle them, kind of like what you would see a human mother do. And so I guess Columbus and the boys were so long without female companionship that they had this idea of mermaids that came about. Okay. The last order that we're going to talk about within the class Mammalia is the order Cetacea, which are your marine mammals. They include your whales, dolphins, porpoises. And again, they do have lungs, and so they have to come to the surface of the water to breathe. And that's one of the reasons why humans have been able to hunt these organisms. But the marine mammals include, the order Cetacea includes things like your killer whale, your dolphin, okay, and minke whale. Any questions about the mammals? Okay. Remember again,